stone.
If it's Friday and we're loving this new time slot, it's Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. I'm your host, Kyle Bigelow, and joining me in studio, as always, is Beauty, Lexington Sours.
Hello.
And Beast, Benjamin Wolf.
That's appropriate.
In terms of prosaic skill and technical ability, respectively. If you feel a certain tingling sensation in your fingertips, you can tweet us at Bluegrass Bios from your internet machines. A shout out to Jenny Mowry for tweeting us last week. Yep. Keep them coming, Jenny. Our guests today are Sherry Estill. She's a director of crisis care at the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by local journalist and founder of the Kentucky Fried Zine Fest, Michelle Aiello. We come to you every Friday live from noon to two to bring you voices from the Lexington community, hence the name, who are out there thinking about you even when you're not thinking about yourself. Sometimes we also have clowns.
Mm-hmm, we do.
Kind of a grab bag. If you're new to the show, Lexington is the appropriately named and talented journalism student at the University of Kentucky, who we enjoy mocking for her taste in men.
Yep, that's accurate.
Ben, who we lovingly refer to as the Benjineer.
I like that a lot.
Because of his background in rail transportation.
Oh, that too, yes.
Because he runs the board like a curmudgeonly angel playing the harp. And
harpsichord. Yes.
Right, I'll make a note.
There you go.
And I am the misanthropic veteran in love with his own voice, as you can tell. Together we interview people who have things to say. Some of these people are local artists, non-profiteers, reporters, police officers, or entrepreneurs. Sometimes they're just whoever I want to talk to.
Yeah.
Whatever we're doing it for you, whoever you are. So we're going to bring on our first guest in about 10 minutes. But first, Lex, I wanted to ask you, because it's in the newspaper today, you could say in some senses this is the beginning of the 2016 college football season. The media day, I think it was yesterday and goes into today, at least yesterday. The athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, spoke to reporters. I think today is the first day of actual practice coming out of the new facilities for a lot of these guys. And they had an article about by Jerry Tipton, who was part of a large group of reporters that were fielding questions to Mitch Barnhart. And they were talking about the woes of the football program. Now, you're a big fan of football, correct?
I am. I love Kentucky football. Big fan.
Even above basketball?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. See, that was one of the weird things when I got here, and I think you're rare in that sense. Well, Ben,
it took us months to realize that. It was until you got here, and then a few months after, we realized that Lexington's a big football fan.
It's true, because you have to squeeze her, wring things out of her like
a little
terry
bit,
cloth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, you more basketball or football?
I'm more basketball because I can play basketball.
Okay. There you go.
And I can relate.
See, I can do neither, so I just...
Oh, it's up for grabs.
Right.
I gotcha.
I like the festivities of it, and then watching grown men
try to... Sweaty lycra.
I realized at a very, very early age, I do not like being pushed, shoved, or tackled. Especially from behind when I can't see you coming. This is my least favorite thing in the world to have done to me. So
it's certainly...
I wasn't going to play.
It's not in my top 10. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I would be a scrappy player.
But in most of the... Yeah, you would. I could see you up on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to face you.
Uh-huh. 5'1" terror right here.
It's a fact of life, though, that that football is the number one sport as far as money making for universities and competitive atmosphere. So when I first came here, I was very surprised. I mean, I knew how big basketball was here because when I was accepted to UK was I guess that was 2012. It was sort of the Aaron Harrison run of late game tournament 3-point miraculous shots. Yeah. Very exciting. But I hadn't realized, because I hadn't been accepted during the football season, how little people actually care about it. The majority.
Well, do you know the history of UK football?
The history of
a little bit, yeah.
Like their former like good times, or
yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Well, we had.
And they went to like a Peach Bowl in the '70s or something.
Bear Bryant was our coach.
I thought Bear Bryant of
Alabama.
Yeah, of Alabama.
Oh, okay. He left because the basketball team was getting more attention and more money than he was. Mm. So we could have had Adolph Rupp and Bear Bryant, and he won. Put an asterisk next to it, a national championship.
What year was that?
Early '50s.
Okay.
Or maybe late '50s. Mm-hmm. But okay. It was in those days they declared the national championship before, or the champion before they played the bowl games. And Oklahoma was the national champion. We beat Oklahoma in the Peach Bowl and was sort of after the fact awarded a national championship, which every other college that plays football, you know, disputes that. That yeah. We have one.
I mean, they did that up until the '90s, man. Yeah. The only reason University of Colorado, which is sort of my first alma mater, got a national championship in 1990.
Because it got five downs in one.
Oh, okay. You remember that, huh?
Well, that, and I watched the 30 for 30. I remember it, and it's fresh in my memory from watching the 30 for 30 on. Is it Mac Davis? Mac somebody.
At CU?
Yeah.
I think it was Barnhart. No, it wasn't Barnhart, because that's who we're talking about right now. Yeah. Anyway, I can't think of it off the top of my head. But anyway, we're gonna have Sherry on here in a couple of minutes. I think she just got into the studio. But during the rest of the show, in our in-between segments, I want to break down Mitch Barnhart's four reasons why University of Kentucky football is not on par, starting with just the size of the state, right?
I don't think it's necessarily the size of the state that he was saying, but the size of the
population,
the amount of athletes that the state is producing.
Sure. And the competition on sides. You have Tennessee to the south. You've got Ohio State right up the road.
Right.
You've got, Big Ten. You're competing, because we're as north as the south gets, we're competing with the Big Ten and the rest of the SEC.
Right.
And the ACC. For the best talent in the country.
Agreed, and that's part of it. But I'm just telling you what Barnhart said, which is that it's an issue of population, right? And
He's wrong. I'll say it right now. He's wrong.
Well, I mean, if you just take simple statistics, if you have more high school programs, you'll have more high school athletes. Thus, the percentage of those that are likely to be football bowl eligible, this Division I eligible, or caliber at least, would be higher.
But
right?
I think
does that not make sense?
It makes sense, but I think if you've got a good program, that you will draw people from surrounding states and areas to your program, especially SEC. And you know, if you're a premier athlete, you'll get to start at Kentucky. Lure them in that way.
If you want to come here. And
if
why,
you want to come here.
And that's that there is the rub. Go ahead.
Well, we can come back to this point. I've interviewed former athletes for different publications, and they have said that the community is why they came to UK, and they've come from various cities around cities and states around the United States and have come to UK because of such a strong community, even though there isn't that football legacy.
When I think of 18-year-old jocks, the first thing that I think about with them is not their community awareness. So I don't know. But we'll get back to this. We'll probably spend most of the show on it because I don't have anything else prepared. Unless we end up with quantum mechanics towards the end. We're going to go to a couple of songs right now.
Sure.
When we come back, we'll have on Sherry from the Nest, Lexington.
Right.
This is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. We're back on Bluegrass Bios. That wasn't very sharp. You're listening to Lexington Community Radio. In studio with us is Sherry Estel. She's the director of the Crisis Care Program at the Ness Center for Women, Children, and Families here in Lexington. Thank you for coming in today, Sherry.
Thank you so much for having us.
So I was hoping we could start by explaining what the Nest is and does for our audience.
The Nest is a local nonprofit here in town. We have four programs that we're quite proud of. We have a child care center that has a respite component, which means pretty much if you don't have access to supportive family or friends or child care assistance, give us a call, and you need to go to study for the GED or go to your doctor's appointment without your children, give us a call and we'll watch your child for free. It is a certified child care center. It is 3 stars rated, so it's not a babysitting service, it's an educational facility. Then we have parenting for men, fathers and mothers. We do counseling, domestic violence counseling for children and adults. And then I do crisis care, which tries to help with families' emergency needs. So you may have paid your rent and utilities, but little Junior has a hole in his shoe, and you have $20, and you know you need to get shampoo and conditioner and bar soap. Come see me if I have those items. Most of those items are donated by people in the community, or the actual items or the money to be able to buy those things. So it's not really funded at Crisis Care, but we really depend upon the generosity of the community of Lexington.
So Crisis Care would be the closest program you have toward intervention then of the four?
No, our domestic violence as well. We all work closely together.
Okay.
So if a parent is in counseling for domestic violence or having an assessment or in one of our workshops, and in that time they found out that maybe the mom has to go to a job interview and needs some toiletry items or clothing for the interview, they come over to me to Crisis Care. Then I can try to help them. Most times, victims of domestic violence are, when their incident happens, they've left with nothing. So, getting those items back. You may have those items at home, but you can't go back. So getting those household products or your toiletry items or diapers for the child, formula that you left behind, come to me. I partner with agencies like Dress for Success or God's Pantry Food Bank to get a food bank referral or have some listings for jobs, that type thing, for individuals who might be looking for help. So we're really trying to strengthen that family unit in spite of that emergency that may have happened or crisis that may have happened in that family.
Does the Nest really focus on that you are a family unit despite what situation happened to you, and that's kind of your mission in a way to promote that unity?
Exactly. We always say that we really want to strengthen that family unit, the stability of that family unit. It's just like a tree. You can't stand without good roots. So sometimes those roots pop up, sometimes insects get to them. That tree is shaky. So we can't solve every problem for the family, but we at least hope we planted some seeds that will help that family towards stability.
How big of an issue is domestic violence in our community?
Domestic violence is huge in our community. It is sad to say that it's huge. We here at the Nest have seen for the last fiscal year almost 1,400 families. It's 1,398 families we have seen at the Nest for domestic violence, and that includes we have 2 court advocates and an attorney that specifically work with victims of domestic violence. Most times, the victim is in, when they go to court, they're sitting 6 feet away from their perpetrator, who they haven't seen in a few, and they're nervous. They see a judge, they see somebody with a gun. I mean, we have an advocate there to say, okay, this is what's going to happen, A through Z, to try to make them feel comfortable enough to be able to do what they need to do.
Well, and when you're in that situation and there's someone across the room that you don't ever want to see again, there's a fear that justice and the idea of justice couldn't prevail. So having that person there that's your ally, that's your asset, that can help you understand a system.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the key, I believe, for creating a better sense of self is to try to build the self-confidence of that victim. Mm-hmm. They've lost confidence. They have lost sometimes that self-motivating factor, whether it be physical violence or verbal abuse.
Emotional.
If you've heard that you're stupid for so long, you start to believe that you're stupid or incapable of doing anything that you could have done before. So it's really about building up that person's self-confidence, letting them know that they are not alone, and that they can do it. So I'm happy that we are able to support that victim through this next chapter of their lives.
How does crisis care help motivate and help support the confidence of that victim?
A lot of the clients that I see, client families that I see, and I've seen this last fiscal year, almost 3,000 clients.
Wow. Not just domestic violence related,
not just
but
domestic violence,
but
across the board. And what I see, and the largest number of clients that I see are between the ages of 25 and 44 years of age. A lot of people would tend to think that it's younger, but generally it's about 25 to 44, and that's about the age when you have foster care students that, foster care, young people who have been in foster care, who are just now getting back together, you know. They sort of quit school when they turn 18 and leave the state's care, but then they find that they need some assistance after that. So a lot of the things I see is lack of confidence. The majority of them, nearly 88%, have not gotten a GED or high school diploma. I wish I had the magic pill that would stop people from quitting school in the 11th grade. But and now they have hopes and dreams like everybody else, but find it difficult to move forward to that next level.
Right.
So they want to, you know, get that GED. They want to get a better job. Sometimes they're underemployed, unemployed, you know, and just lack the direction. We assume that people have those tools to move forward. And sometimes they just need me to sit there and say, okay, I've heard you say this. Let's figure out steps that we can go to get there. I'm giving you 30 days to find out what you need to know to get your GED. And then we can come back and regroup. And let's see what we need to do and celebrate those successes. Sometimes people don't know about just short-term goals, not the 10-year goals, just the 3 to 6 months goals.
Well, if you've never done it before, if you've never had anybody in your family do it, it can be so overwhelming.
And that's where you get the generational poverty. That's the same thing over and over, and you want to try to break that cycle.
I'm curious, what's the main reason why they drop out of school so close to quitting, and what's the reason that brings them back?
Well, a lot of times, it could be a little bit of everything, just instability in the family. They need to go and work. Are they just feeling stressed, or they get pregnant at an early age, or it could be drugs, gangs, it could be anything, a variety of things.
What gets them to go back? What's that moment that they go, I needed to stay. I need to go back and get that.
And you hear it a lot. But it's them saying, I don't know, it's too hard, I don't know. But they haven't gone to check on it yet. All I want you to do is go check on it so that they can see the support over at BCTC's Adult Education Program to let them know that they can study for a subject at a time instead of the whole thing all at once.
Okay. So does it seem just like an obstacle they can't climb, and then once they do some research on it and get to know it, they go, oh, okay,
That's what I'm finding, because it didn't used to be that way. You had to take the GED all in one rush there. Mm-hmm. Now you can take each section, therefore you can study for each section. So that's what I try to keep hitting home.
That would be great, especially if you have to work.
Especially if you have to work on top of that. And you're stressed out, and the rent is due, and for some reason my electricity bill is $800 because you're living in substandard housing and the air is really going out of the holes in your apartment or house. So, you know, you have a lot of stressors that'll keep people down a lot. And it's sometimes too easy to say, this is just too hard.
And tired.
I would imagine. This is just too hard. I'm just going to not think about this and put this on the back burner.
Sherry Estel, she's the director of Crisis Care at the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families. For more information, go to thenestlexington.org. Sherry, your website lists 22 partners in the area that you work with. How important is it to have that network of nonprofits, and how is the Nest unique among them?
I think it's very important to have partners. We're small. While we focus on those four things, just something as small as another agency that does LexTran bus tokens, mm-hmm. so I can get to work, or I can get to the doctor, or I can get to the... I don't have the money to do that. I would love to be able to give bus tokens, but it's just too expensive. But somebody else has that ability to do that, and maybe that's what they specialize in. Something as small as cleaning supplies, just to keep your house clean. You know, I've got bugs everywhere, but I'm going to keep my section of this clean. So just getting paper towels and sponges and Pine Sol, a mop, just to keep your house clean. There's a small agency that does that. I partner with them. They've given me a number of referral spaces. Now, do I get more phone calls than I have referral spaces? Yes. But the people that I can help, the seniors who are on a fixed income, something like laundry detergent from this little agency is invaluable. You know, I partner with Dress for Success. Now, I wish there was a, I'm going to put this out there in the universe, there's not a Dress for Success for men. And I have a lot of men who go on interviews just need khaki pants and a polo. Or work boots, steel-toed boots. You know, I had a gentleman who came out of prison, and the only thing he asked me for was a razor, shaving cream, bar soap, a washcloth, deodorant. I had everything but the deodorant. I had Secret Tropical Scent, which I showed him, and he took it. But what's the reason why? Because he already had strikes against him anyway going into this interview. He didn't want how he appeared to be another barrier to him getting a job. Okay, so, you know, just being able to have little things like that, or partnering with Jubilee Jobs, you know, to send these men to help them find out who's taking those who may have a felony record or who have barriers to getting a job. You know, those are the things that are invaluable to me or us at the Nest. The other part of your question was...
How is the Nest unique? Because you're talking about these different specialties. Some of them we've had on our program, God's Pantry, Greenhouse 17, you know, for shelter, temporary. But it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that that the Nest is almost like the first line of defense, so you can sort of be that conduit to all these different places?
Never thought of it that way, but I would say yes. I think I think how we're unique is that we holistically, it starts in one area, and we can say, oh, I have a child care center. Let's see if we can have them watch your child so you can go to the police station and file an EPO. Oh, I have a counselor here on staff. You know, I've heard you mention that you're quite afraid of the situation that you're in now. Or, oh, you know, you have a case plan. Well, let's see if we can get you into parenting. You know, those things that we can address right then and there, and those items that we can address, that's where your good partners come in to be able to help. Now, there is a lack of affordable housing in Lexington. There are not that many shelters for families in Lexington. The shelters are full. You know, do you have people sleeping in cars? Yes. I'm seeing a lot of people moving here from other states, Detroit and New Jersey and Phoenix, Arizona, you know, for whatever reason they're leaving their situations because it's so difficult. And they're telling me that Lexington is this great place and they didn't have all these resources in their cities. So I'm happy sometimes to be able that they have a good opinion of Lexington, first of all, and then knowing that they're going to try to get the assistance that they need. Now, there are not a lot of places that can help with your utility bill when it gets too high, so it's all about educating people not to wait until it gets $400, you know, to try to do something about it when you know you're not going to have those resources to be able to pay it. So your utilities, your rents, and things like that, you know, come into play.
Do most utilities have like a payment assistance kind of thing, or at least I know they have that space out the seasons because your electric
the
bills.
The budget
so,
plan.
So, yeah,
if,
yeah.
If that individual calls the utility company and gives them some type of determinative date, they'll try to work with them. But it is what it is. I've had a lot of people with a $400 LexServe bill, and they turn your water off if you don't pay your LexServe bill. So, you know, you really need to. They were like, I don't know, you know, what are they going to do? How they can't turn off my toilet, but they can turn off your water to the toilet. So, you know, you have a lot of people that are just learning to about responsibilities. I'm all about empowering that individual. If I can't empower you, you will never learn to try to take care of some of these things yourselves. And sometimes it can be overwhelming, all the things that you have to do. So, you know, I always encourage other people to empower and not enable an individual to get to move towards self-sufficiency.
You mentioned earlier that you have men come in, and I think there's a lot of I don't want to say stigma or stereotype, but when you say Center for Women and Children and Families, people don't immediately think men. So
that's why we say families. We're seeing an increase in the number of single fathers as well. They're learning now that the custody doesn't necessarily have to go to the mom. They may have to fight more for it, but it doesn't necessarily go. We just assume it should go to the mom. So I'm seeing, it's encouraging to see men stepping up and taking more responsibility for their children.
Is there maybe a change now in the idea that men can reach out for help, that they can admit, hey, you know, I can't handle all this right now. I need you to go to daycare right now. I need you to go to the child care center.
We see that a lot, too. I had a young man who was 21. He had a toddler, he was two, and he was staying with his grandfather. But his grandfather was it was just too overwhelming for the grandfather to have the 21-year-old and the 2-year-old.
Right.
And so he was trying to find a shelter, but he said he felt funny going into the Salvation Army Center with his son. Because they looked at him different, like he felt like he was social services was going to be called on,
right?
You know, and so he was like, "There's no center for single fathers," you know. So I'm putting that out there in the world, too. Single father shelter. So, you know, there's a lot of stigmatism with men who come in,
right?
And they're asking for diapers. You know, I just need help for diapers until I can get this check, or I really need a baby bed, you know, because the social worker said he can't sleep with me anymore, or, you know, I need food. It's like I try to encourage them not to believe that just because they can't do it at this time that they won't be able to do it this time. You know, you need help today, get the help today. If you feel like you need to give back, please give back. Please give back, you know, if that makes you feel better. But right now, let's get you the help you need so you can move forward.
It goes back to that idea of empowerment.
Empowerment. Circling back.
Sherry Estill in studio with us. She's the director of crisis care at the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families. For more information, you can go to thenestlexington.org. So, the process. Is it walk in? Is it an appointment? How do people render your services?
Just give us a call at 859-259-1974, and we'll be able to direct your call to your appropriate needs. So, in crisis care, we see clients Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. They don't need an appointment for that. It's sort of God's pantry closes at 3, so it sort of works. Helps us. But if you need diapers, you need diapers. And if it's after 3 o'clock, it's after 3 o'clock. It is what it is. I'm not going to let you go without diapers, because, you know, or formula. Right. Come see us. Give us a call.
Your annual fundraiser, A Night for the Nest, is being held on August 27th. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. We always have it at Normandy Farms. And if you haven't been to Normandy Farms, if you haven't had an opportunity to go to any horse farms, most people in cities, big cities, they live there forever and never know what goes on inside those buildings or inside those farms. So this gives you an opportunity to get to the farm.
This is going out toward Paris.
Paris, Spike, right. Yes, absolutely. It's a wonderful place to have it, and every year they'll let out some horses or their yearlings come out.
Aww.
And it's kind of cool, and it's so beautiful there. It is from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. We have a raffle for a 7-day luxurious Florida escape. The raffle tickets are $25 each, and only 500 will be sold. So it's a 4-bedroom home with a pool, and it's up to $1,000 in airfare assistance. So if you don't get a chance to go out to the farm, at least come and get a raffle ticket for us. It's great. It's a cocktail attire affair. The entertainment is live music from the Raleigh Daily Danny Cecil Duo and the Mercy Men Band.
They're my favorite.
It's a full bar. There's horse farm tours. Then we have a silent auction. We'd love for you to come on down. Tickets are $100. $700 for a table of 8. So come on down and just come see us. We're open 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And we'll be able to help you out. And next year will be our 40th anniversary.
Wow.
Wow.
And we're planning a lot of great things for next year. So just go to our website and just keep in touch.
If maybe people can't make it out to A Night at the Nest, but they're still interested in those raffle tickets.
Come on down, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Okay.
We'll take donations at that time or raffle ticket sales, any of those things.
Speaking of donations, how can people donate either their time or their in-kind donations?
Yeah, absolutely. We get a lot of students. It's really great to see universities now requiring students to do some community service work. So we get a lot of students. We get a lot of people who just want to take a couple of hours to try to help. And if that's doing a fundraising at your church or in your neighborhood for a diaper drive, or if some men want to get together and help other young men, with shaving cream and razors and, something other than tropical scents. we love that. We love the creative ideas. We had one group who did happy birthday bags for kids who may not get a chance to have a birthday, really. It gets kind of expensive when you think about it. You get the cake and the icing and the horns and the plates and all that sort of thing. And they made these little bags for kids that we could actually give them, say, hey, this is for little Johnny's birthday. That relief sometimes you see on the parents' faces is immeasurable. Little things like I said, diaper drives or doing, just for household cleaning products, or if they want to just bring in school supplies and backpacks.
Oh, I can imagine that's huge right about
it
now.
It is huge, because a school supply list can render a family in terror. So, just having, loose
the smelly
paper,
markers alone.
The smelly markers. Now they're asking for dry erase markers and, things like that. They're real specific on there. It has to be a Ticonderoga pencil, number 2 pencils, So they get kind of stressed out. So, and one parent told me they didn't believe their child would get the same education if they didn't get all the items on the school supply list. Not true. Not true. Please spread the word that it's not true.
I've never used a protractor once in my life. I turned out all right. Sherry Estill, she's the director of crisis care for the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families. For more information, you can go to thenestlexington.org. Sherry, I'd read in your staff directory that you'd spent 17 years in the private sector. What prompted you to move your talents to a 501c?
Very long story, but in that time that I spent at the, in the private sector, I realized one day that I had over 2,000 people at my disposal for help. So it started with Dress for Success there at that company. And from that company, it went to getting mentors in a program at that time called LEAP. So it was a Louisville Education and Employment Partnership where you mentored a young person who was failing three or more subjects, who had missed 30 or more days of school. So I had an opportunity. I had all these people at my disposal that can help give back to the community. Why not? you go to work every day. You see these people every day who sometimes people wouldn't call them your friends. But if you think about it, you spend 8 or more hours a day with that individual, these individuals, and you have an opportunity to have them help. They have the education, the wisdom, the resources to be able to help another person who doesn't have those things. So it worked out for me being able to do that. You know, my mother used to say most people are one paycheck away from homelessness. So if you have the opportunity to try to change a person's way of thinking, that they can do more than what they feel like they should accept, why not? So you have no idea how many opportunities you had in a 2,000 person company that can help a young person move forward. You know, just one kid got a kick out of playing golf. He'd seen it on TV before, but never played golf before, and this mentor took him out to play golf. You know, he was like, wow, you know, I had an opportunity. I know that game now. I've played that game. So something as little as that can help, and anybody can really start it. So I think we always need people to help us out move forward. We can all think of people in our lives who we admire, or there's some personality traits we think we really love, you know, that we want to take on. But sometimes we need somebody to sort of direct us and say, you know, that's wrong. No, you should think about it this way. And then you take that advice or you don't take that advice. But generally, somebody usually has something that they think about and they think, you know, maybe they were right. So it's an opportunity to help. And so sort of flipped on his own. My mother had dementia, and the Alzheimer's Association of the Bluegrass here in town were very valuable to me, to a miscontrol freak person who with an Alzheimer's or dementia patient, every day is a new day. Mm-hmm. So it kind of brought me down pegs from being that control freak, and somebody was able to help me, and so I gave back to them as well. And then through that, I came into social services. And then when you think about it, if you're a manager of a department, you have 20, 25 people with their 20, 25 different personalities and personal issues that they have to take care of that they're bringing to work every day. So it's pretty much the same thing. Where do you go for help? How can I get help? Do you need help? Sometimes they just won't ask. They'll just come to work every day. So working outside of the, in the community, working within the private sector, you know, people never talk about the personal things that are happening within that company. Everybody has something going on, you know, so it just sort of fell into place. You know, that's one of my favorite phrases. Somebody said, you know, when you think things are falling to pieces, they might just be falling into place. And they really were. I love what I do. I love being able to affect a lot of people's lives and hope that they, you know, I love it when they come back and said, you talked to me and you told me this and I never forgot it. So that's the best part, seeing them move forward.
I was going to ask you as a last question, if you could give us an example of the most recent time that your job's been worthwhile, but it sounds like it's pretty much every day.
Almost every day, almost. You know, I don't get a lot of people. I always say if I don't see them, they must be doing well, but they know I'm here if they need me. So when they do come back and they said, you know, for example, I had a young lady who was in the last class of the dental technology school at BCTC, and my mother was a dental technologist, and I had all the her equipment was still at the house, and she was talking about how expensive things were, and I thought, oh, you know, I have all this stuff in the garage. I said, you know what, I have all these tools in the garage, maybe you can use them. And I brought them to her, and she was so grateful for it. You know, when she graduated, she sent me an invitation. It's just like, all I can do to say, you know, you've made it through this particular point and you didn't quit. You know, you had some struggles, but you didn't quit, and that's the best part. I mean, it sort of just warms your heart. I can't explain it any more than that. That here's an example of somebody who took to heart your suggestions or advice or goal setting, and they put it to use. And they have to have a little bit in them themselves, you know, that part of them that says, you know, I can do this. Somebody cares about me. Because sometimes the people that you call your family and friends are not that supportive. You know, they want to be, but they remember when. And sometimes it just takes that outside person that's around your world that can go from the outside looking in and identify things that you maybe need some help with or some support for. And you hope those little seeds just germinate a little bit, you know. And it's grateful when you see that little gleam in their eye like they got it. So I think that's the best part.
I know Lexington appreciates it, and we appreciate your time, Sherry. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Sherry Estill, she's the director of crisis care at the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families. For more information, go to thenestlexington.org. They have their annual fundraiser, A Night for the Nest, Saturday, August 27th from 6 to 11 p.m. at Normandy Farms off Paris Pike. Music, dinner, silent auction, and most importantly, open bar. You can click through their website to purchase single tickets, table tickets, or just a chance at a 7-night Florida vacation. Well, we appreciate it, Sherry.
Thank you so much.
This is Bluegrass Bios on WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. We're going to go to a few songs, but we'll be right back for me to complain about UK football a little bit more.
And we'll answer the tweet, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I already had a tweeter that wants to jaw at Ben a little bit, so maybe we'll deal with that. All right, this is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. Right.